Blog Talk Radio.
Praise the Lord, everybody. This is the Pride and Purpose Kingdom Network, and this is the show Self-Expressions, the sports edition. And I'm your host for this evening, Brother Robert Pop-Pop Hudson. Thank you. Welcome, each and every one of you, that are joining us for tonight's episode, which happens to be episode 1108. Wow. We have come a long way. I thank you so much for joining me and just sharing with me tonight for tonight's episode. And if you're online and you want to call in, phone number to call in is 319-527-6091. And we have an alternate number if you're a T-Mobile Metro customer. Phone number to call in is 323-870-4174. Anytime you want to join the conversation, you can hit the number 1. And we can just go ahead and join the conversation. So for tonight's show, the show's title is Black R Story Month 2020, Fight the Power. Now, this is the sports edition of Self-Expression, so we are going to go deep into sports, but we do have a chapter that we can talk about spiritually, which is going to be 1 Samuel, chapter 17, verses 1 through 58. And tonight, the sports part, we're going to cover the track and field world. And the reason why I'm covering the track and field world, because there are so many significant things that have happened in the track and field world that has been either simply YouTube or Google can't provide the exact information as it happened and when it happened. The first part of my is going to be a two-parter, and it's going to be with Jesse Owens. Now, with Jesse Owens, he was an Olympian, and in 1936, he had to travel to Berlin, Germany, where the Olympics was taking place. And Jesse Owens, he basically dominated the part of the track and field as far as the 100, 200, and the long jump. Now, the interesting part of this was that Adolf Hitler was in attendance to the Olympics, because the Berlin was the home, was the capital city of Germany. And in 1936, around that time, between the 1920s and the 1940s, Adolf Hitler wanted to demonstrate that the Nazi race was the dominant race. He proclaimed it to be the Aryan race. So, that was, the birth of, where anyone called themselves the Aryan nation. It was basically where, at that time around, where Adolf Hitler proclaimed the Germans to be the master race. And he called them, or quoted as saying, they were the master race. When Jesse Owens was competing in the Olympics during 1936, a lot of people would feel as though that, when you, at that time, and in this time period, anybody that was an athlete or was participating, especially in the Olympics, which was an international event, no matter whether you liked that country, you didn't like that country, you would send your athletes there. Now, this predates when the Israeli athletes were assassinated at the Olympic Village, when the first two acts of terrorism happened. In order for Adolf Hitler to demonstrate that he had better, or they were superior, was that in these athletic competitions, he felt as though that no matter who won against, what other country he won against, that all of his athletes were superior. The only problem was that these athletes train within Germany, not against international competition, which he quickly saw during the first day of the competitions where, you know, the Germans medaled only once in the first day of participation, which was a bronze medal. And from there, Adolf Hitler decided not to be in attendance for the games or be available to, you know, shake the participants' hands as far as a gold, silver, and bronze medal winner. At that point, when Jesse Owens started to dominate the games, Jesse Owens, as he participated in more and more events, Jesse Owens is he's basically starting to become beloved. And, you know, the more and more that, you know, as he started participating, the more and more the host country started to like him. And they started actually cheering him. And when they started cheering him, it was kind of funny because a lot of the German athletes, they basically, when he was participating in the long jump, he actually had a help from one of the German athletes that was actually competing against him because he fouled his first two jumps. He didn't know his first jump was not a practice jump. And his second jump, he actually stepped over the line. And the German athlete that helped him basically said, hey, just lay your towel out right before you jump in, right next to the start line, and you go ahead and jump. And that's how he won his last medal there at the Berlin Games. Jesse Owens is so well-liked by the people of Germany, even though it was expressed that all their athletes were superior. He actually had his, you know, the 50th celebration of the 1936 Olympics in Germany. They actually celebrated, you know, a foreigner, and that actually opened up their international trade relations with the world. For a long time, just like Japan, Germany was not allowed to have militia or any kind of fighting force to even to defend the country. They had to solely rely on NATO because Japan and Germany, once they were defeated in World War II, were just not allowed to have any kind of chances of doing what they did, which was some kind of way, finding a way where they can create a world war or world conquest for their respective countries. And, you know, Jesse Owens, which is, you know, I was surprised I did do the research. You can still find footage of him, even though it's grainy, on YouTube, where you see how dominant he was. And the fact that Jesse Owens, you know, he never broke the 10-second barrier in the 100-meter. He posted 10.3, which is amazing because it was just so hard for any athlete to get under 10 seconds in the 100-meter dash, which has been broken right now today. But that record stood for over 60 years. That Jesse Owens that was in the best arena, which was the Olympics at the time. And when, you know, when we talk about the Olympics, wow. And let's see. As far as that portion of the Olympics, that was a time, and this, you know, and this era right now where it's a pretty much show me, or I need a visual effect. There weren't many cameras, and it was not a lot of networks where, you know, like we have like here now on Sports Center, where you see images of someone doing an incredible feat over and over again. This was broadcasted, you know, basically live, but it wasn't the event, because don't forget, when we are experiencing the time frame, if you compare it right now, whereas in the right now, we are, you know, it's about a little bit after 8, p.m. Over in Germany, it's about 8 a.m. Saturday morning. So you can see how we have the visuals, and usually around this time, or when the Olympics were competing, you know, families were in bed. They were basically coming home from work or something like that. So it was kind of hard. They would get the news a day later, basically. And so you can just be understanding the imagination and the amazement of the families that once they heard that not only was it the dominated Olympics, it was a Black American that actually dominated the Olympics and actually swept a great amount of medals. So that's one part of the Olympics I want to talk about, which is the 1936 Olympics. So I want to talk about right now, real briefly, the 1968 Olympics. And basically, in the 1968 Olympics, this was held in Mexico City in October. And it took place October 16th in 1968. This was a time in our country where it was a frustration. You know, Martin Luther King was assassinated. It seems like we had no kind of social or economic power in this country. It seems like, all over the world, it seems everything ran amok with the human rights issues. With the human rights issues, it was a lot of atrocities committed. In fact, right before the Olympics started in Mexico, a bunch of college students from Mexico City, they basically had an uprising, and it was kind of violent because 300 students got either hurt or killed, and three of the security that was supposed to provide security over the Olympic Village and the stadium were actually killed. So it was the use of force as far as what the government or respective governments of the world were doing, to them they seemed to be justified. So when on the podium we had three athletes agree to celebrate the 200-meter race, we had Tommy Smith, Jim Carlos, and there was a third guy, which was Steve Norman. So Tommy Smith, he was the winner of the gold medal in this event. Peter Norman was a silver medalist, and John Carlos was the bronze medalist. Now, what happened was, even though these three athletes competed and they have their respective, you know, outcomes, gold, silver, and bronze, you know, we see even though Peter Norman didn't, you know, raise his fist, what happened was is that he was in total, you know, he was totally on board with what Smith and Carlos planned to do. In fact, even though he did not raise his fist, he had some input. And what happened was, you know, John Carlos, he, before they were on their way to the podium, they were originally going to wear black gloves on both hands. What happened was John Carlos forgot his gloves, and Peter Norman suggested that they share the gloves. One wears one right, one wears one left. And so you see the photo, you can see that everywhere. That you see both of them with one right hand upraised, one left hand upraised. And that's what happened, basically. Even though, you know, coming back that Tommy Smith and John Carlos faced some kind of flack, the most flack was reflected at Peter Norman. He was disbanned from the Australian Olympic competition. He wasn't allowed, because the thing about when you raise awareness, especially to basic treatment back then, it was they would try to quiet you. And what they did was, with Tommy Smith and John Carlos, a movement actually happened. Because don't forget, we had a vacuum here in our country in 1966. That vacuum was the death of years earlier of Malcolm X. And then we had the vacuum of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And then we had the brewing of the Vietnam War, where young Americans were just snatched up to fight for a war that Congress never announced that it was a war. Whereas young men at an alarming rate was just going over to the South Asian seas to fight a war that never was announced. So there was a great amount of frustration through all of America. And back in Australia, you know, back then, you know, they're looking at Peter Norman as even just being on the stage, they looked at it as their own atrocities they had. Now, in Australia, they have a group of people called Aborigines. And the Aborigines are considered one of the first known living civilizations that has survived. Not even the, you know, the bloodline of the Egyptians, even though they have rich heritage of King Tut, Queen Nefertiti, none of their bloodlines directly ties back into that predates biblical times, which the Aborigines, they actually have that in their culture until the Australian government decided to, they felt as though that the Aborigine way of living was antiquated and should assimilate to the country. And so a lot of atrocities was committed against the Aborigines and also non-European natives to Australia. So they looked at him as he was the champion, and he also was trying to put a black eye on his country. Peter Norman, you know, even as impressive as he was, as far as meddling, it should have been a 1-2-3 event where it was America gold, America silver, America bronze. But that did not happen. Peter Norman was able to, you know, just medal. And on top of that, he did, you know, next to winning, he was second best. He got a silver medal, which is pretty good. One of the things that, you know, I didn't like hearing about, even though this is over 50 years ago, that when Norman went back to when Peter Norman went back to Australia, they pretty much like killed his career. He wasn't allowed to compete in any Olympic events. And you know, one of the things that you would think that, you know, let bygones be bygones, but in the year 2000 when the Olympics was held in Sydney, Australia, he was not even recognized for even meddling in any event where they were celebrating all the, you know, Australia's greatest athletes in the Olympics. Peter Norman was never mentioned. Unfortunately, in 2012, that's when the Australian government decided to apologize for the treatment of Peter Norman. And, you know, even though it cost him his career, it never cost him his happiness, because time and time again they asked him if he ever would do it again. He said, yeah, I would do it. And he was like, I won the silver medal. I had every right to be up on that stage, no matter what anybody else is doing. And he was like, yes, I supported what they did, 100%. He was like, our country wasn't the greatest country either. No matter how good our country looked, on the inside, we still had something ugly. And I said, wow, what a statement. Unfortunately, they recognized him in 2012, but Peter Norman passed away in 2006, which was, you know, I kind of feel as though that it was something that the country should have honored, you know, because we have so many countries in the Olympics that don't even have a chance of medaling. You know, you have countries like India, which, you know, they seem to be the least athletic country, like India. You know, I haven't seen or heard, you know, not unless it's something like, you know, something native to the country, because India is not one of those deep-rooted countries that even participate in soccer. You know, soccer seems to be the worldwide sport that each and every country participates, but you don't see or hear that, you know, soccer is, you know, a main part of, even when they have the World Cup, where they are actually a player, like they have a chance to win. You know, and that's like one of the other countries. They're not like China, Russia, or Japan, or Brazil. And for that part, you know, Jamaica, they've been doing pretty good with Usain Bolt, you know, with the sprints and the 4x4 relays. Now, you know, the thing with, you know, athletes protesting, and the thing with, you know, everybody says, well, they shouldn't be doing that anyway. They should be participating in what they get paid to do or what they're supposed to do. You say, well, nobody, we want to see entertainment. We want to be entertained. Why are these athletes speaking up? Why are they doing this at this time? Why are they, you know, showing, you know, why are they wearing pink for breast cancer awareness? And why are they doing this? Well, I just want to see them play ball. I want to see them play the sport, not nothing else. Well, why are they doing that? Why else? Why not? When is the best time? And just think about this for a moment. If you're at work I know you get paid to work. What are you doing? Mopping floors, filing papers, making Xerox copies, delivering mail. Whatever you're doing in your job, there hasn't been the scrutiny of a camera on you no matter what you do, where you can't even blow your nose, you can't scratch your behind, you can't do anything without something being watched or documented or recorded in some kind of way. What these athletes are doing is they're taking advantage. Because if you want to see every aspect, every downfall, every triumph, every failure, well, guess what? Now you're going to see my feelings. And, everyone wants to say, well, if I was Colin Kaepernick, I would be quiet and just take the money. Well, guess what? He's quiet now, and he's still getting money. You don't hear anything about any kind of kneeling down or anything. Because he's still getting money. He's got so much. He's making more money on speaking engagements than he ever did in his career. And, that's the thing. When we are scrutinized and we're under microscope so hard that, we feel as though that, hey, when is the best time for me to speak up? After the 1968 Olympics, and the Olympics, even though that happens every 4 years, that was the best time for the United States, where they thought they would flourish with scientists and athletes, because everyone thought America was so great and they would just defect to this country. Well, after that, and once it was looked at and examined, and then, all of a sudden, the so-called great country of America, the house of opportunity, the land, the free, it didn't look so free. It didn't look so pleasant. Because after, the 1968 Olympics, that's when things started getting a lot tighter. And the media started actually reporting the things that were actually happening. They were actually, instead of letting it be swept under the rug, no, don't cover that story, or, why don't you run another story, or we'll give you a better story than this one, but just don't run this story. That's when the media started actually being aware of what was actually going on, not only around them, but in the country itself, where they started self-examining, was America really this great country that we proclaimed it to be? Is this really a land of opportunity? Right now today, everyone still says, as far as Black Americans, that we're owed 40 acres and a mule. But I guess if somebody was to, propose that, that we get a 120 acres and a pickup truck, they'll probably run with that. But the whole thing is that, no matter, even if our ancestors were given 40 acres and a mule, and even right now, even if they can tie us to our ancestors, at some point, we have to let it go, because, even if someone offered me 120 acres and a pickup truck, I'm going to say, for which one? For which one of my ancestors? Because the term endurance cannot be something that's paid. I understand that, everyone thinks that, there should be some kind of reparations. But reparations are for somebody that has not gotten by something. If you rob me and you see me years later and say, hey, I robbed you, I'm sorry I robbed you, I don't want You're sorry. I don't want your sorrows, and I don't want you to try to make up for it. It's something that should have never been done, but it's been done. By the time you're coming to me and approaching me and you're trying to offer some kind of can't say it. But if you're trying to recoup, what happened and try to make up for it, make amends, I'm not, I don't, I, if I, at that point, no matter what it is, I've probably, you know, forgiven you. But for you to come up and say, hey, let me just, you know, I'm going to give you this for this and that. But no, that moment or that time stamp that happened in my life, can never change and it never can be made up for, no matter what. You know, no matter what it's supposed or, you know, or whatever proposition. That's something that you can't, you know, you can't have back, you can't take back, and you can't, you know, make up for. You know, lost time is lost time. And that's the way I see it. It's, you know, it's basically lost time. You know, I know someone is saying that, you know, this was something that was promised. But there was a lot of times that promises have been broken. I mean, I'm quite sure that no matter, you know, how much you wanted to do it or how much you thought that you was going to, you know, pull through and do something, sometimes promises you make don't come through and they don't come through for fruition. I know it has for me. I know I've promised a lot of stuff. And as far as backing up to doing it, whether it was no fault of my own or just something I just wanted to do but could not do, and it would just happen that way. And if anyone wants to join in, if you're online, the phone number to call in is 319-527-6091. And you can hit the number 1, and you can also call in at 323-870-4174. You can also press 1. And I just like to just thank you for joining in for those online. Thanks for calling in or listening. We thank you so much. We're also broadcasting on www.blogtalkradio.com/CryptidKingdom. Okay, we're going to get back to our topic, which is Black Our Story Month 2020, and it's focused on fighting the power. Now, you know, a lot of times, I'm going to get just a little bit biblical, and we're going to go over and we're going to cover, you know, some of, and you can read on your own, 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 1 through 58. Now, 1 Samuel verses 17, 1 through 58, it covers basically the battle between David and Goliath. I know everybody's heard the story of David and Goliath, but they have not actually understood what was going on and how it came about. Now, how this battle came about was that there was a big amassing of forces. And when they were amassing, they were just trying to think of the best spot they can attack the other. So what happened is that the battle before, you know, the Philistines actually were trying to, you know, they were basically, they had the coastways blocked up. They were actually coming into what happened was to be a conclave. So it's basically, there was a deep valley separating both armies. And if either one went down the valley and tried to go up and attack the other army, there would be a huge amount of casualties. So both sides were just at a standstill for a minute. And they just knew that if they, you know, agitate one of the armies, and basically they were trying to agitate the army of South, and they would just try to say, hey, look, they're going to be tired of us standing here and you know, with this big, massive invasion force, and they're going to probably think that they can kill us. So what happened was they made sure that they had one of their best champions, which has to be Goliath of Garth. And he stood 9 feet 9 inches tall. And He basically was, at that time, if you were to see him, he was like the Terminator, basically. You know, most basketball players now are 7 feet. He passed that almost by 3 feet. You know, and along with just his height, you know, came with his physical strength. You know, and basically they would see Goliath, and they're looking at him, like I said, they're like a small valley separating each of them. And they're watching Goliath just do stuff. They see him moving, you know, boulders and, you know, tree stumps. And they're just looking at him, and they see his impressive strength. And finally, that's when Goliath just challenged him and said, hey, you know, we're going to be here. So, you know, we can finish this off. One, send your greatest warrior, one to take all. He defeats me, you know, we're defeated and we're your slaves. And what's kind of ironic is, you know, and everything leading up to Goliath challenging and their army showing up on opposite shores, on the 40th day, that's when finally someone challenged Goliath, and that was David. You know, 40, it seems to be the testing number. And it seems like that's a number that if you're truly going through one of those trials and tribulations, that 40 seems to be, you know, that number. Because Noah, you know, his ark, you know, it rained for 40 and 40 days, and the children of Israel wandered the wilderness for 40 years. Jesus was also tested in the wilderness for 40 days. And it was just I'm just thinking. I was like, 40 seems to be the number. So on the 40th day, what happened was David had three brothers that were actually in the battlefield. And his father, Jesse, was just concerned. Well, he couldn't find a way for himself to be there in the battlefield because things would probably get bad. And it was basically, if you had no business being on the battlefield, you better not be there. And on top of that, back then, they had spies. So if, you know, they didn't know, you didn't have a purpose and you were there on the battlefield, they'd be like, who are you? And by the time he explains, and they probably would kill him. So he thought the best way was to send his son David to go ahead and check things out on the battlefield. And when David was there, David, you know, he knew his brothers and he knew all the guys that, you know, they served under or with. And David was probably dismayed at how scared they were of this Goliath. And even though David, you know, could see Goliath, he could see from the great distance that this guy was pretty tall. David said, I know that, you know, spiritually based God will not let me fail. No weapon against me should prosper. And so, you know, truly, you know, with faith, David, you know, went out to the battlefield. He was actually asked to, you know, if he wanted armor, the king's armor. And he said, I don't need that. And David, you know, bravely went out there to face Goliath. And Goliath, you know, overconfident, you know, he threw his head at him. When anytime he put his head down to look at David, David hit him, you know, with a stone from his sling. And everybody don't understand how the sling works, but the sling was something that was actually a powerful weapon that, you know, young shepherds would use. And they would use that sling to fight off wolves because they were shepherds. And the only thing they had was their stick and their sling. And the sling was out in long distance. And what they would have to do is when the wolves or whatever predator was coming along, what they would do is, like, he would pick up a mother cat would pick up, you know, a kitten. what they would do is they didn't want to, you know, they wouldn't have time to slaughter the sheep or whatever his flock was. They would actually grab him by the neck like a mother kitten and would try to run away with him. With David, you know, having a sling or any shepherd having a sling, they were able to actually hit the back of the, you know, the neck of the wolf or whatever predator was. They were actually able to actually pelt them very hard. It pretty much would make them let go of that sheep or whatever they had. And like I said, the reason why they would do it because shepherds were pretty good at their job. They were pretty attentive to their flock. They would, you know, sit in the middle of the flock and they would sleep there. And what it was, they wouldn't know what their nature was, and they wouldn't know that if something was wrong or something was alarming to them, that they would be able to help them. And if it was an attack or someone was attacking them or someone tried to run off with one of them, that they would be able to, you know, take action. So when Goliath got hit with that stone in the middle of his head, it stunned him. It stunned him so much that he was so disoriented that David was able to run up on him, take his sword and behead him. The thing about the feat that David did was that his Goliath's sword weighed 126 pounds. Don't forget, Goliath was a huge, massive man. So it took a lot of strength and power from David to actually cut the giant's head off. So once David, you know, achieved that feat, everyone knew that it was not just, you know, a young shepherd boy that was, you know, got lucky. It was somebody that was blessed with not only just the accuracy to stun the giant, but also to behead him with his own sword. And that's, you know, something that, you know, we have to understand that even though they're going up against incredible odds, and it seems that in order for us to succeed, we have to achieve and do or accomplish incredible feats, that it's possible. And even though it seems that David did that, you know, without no problem, it took more than the faith of a mustard seed for David to achieve that. And, you know, with that being said, it's, you know, pretty much time for the call of salvation. I'll go ahead and do the call of salvation. One of the things that we have to understand is no matter where we are, what position we're in, that we tend to not realize that our faith and the very power of our Heavenly Father God is right there. You know, it's, you know, we're not somebody that's you know, have superpowers. We're people that are faith-based, that, you know, once we understand that God's there for us and God is going to do things for us as long as we are faithful and we maintain our faith and we believe and trust in Him, that He truly sent His Son to die for our sins so we can begin anew. And that's what we have to make sure that we do. We make sure that we make a new beginning and we make it count. We have to make it count. You know, God is a God of many, many chances. There is, with God, there is no missing the boat. There is no, oh, that was the perfect time for me to go ahead and turn my life over to Christ. You know, the perfect time to do that is now. So if you haven't done so, you know, you can just go ahead and, you know, you can just, you know, admit to Christ that, you know, you just want to repent for all your sins. That you've tried it your way, and you know, no matter which way you went, or no matter how you tried, that it just didn't work out. And with that, you just want to turn, you know, let them know that you just want to cast away all the sins, that you know, you're sorry, that you're repentant, that you surrender your life to Him, and that you believe that and thank Him for His only begotten Son dying on the cross of Calvary. Once you said that, once you accept, believe, and confess You know, you're a new creature. You are welcome to the kingdom of God. And we thank you so much if you welcome yourself into the kingdom of God. You know, if you've done so, the next suggestion I find is, you know, you tell someone and just make sure you let them know. It doesn't have to be a close friend. It could be anyone. It could be a total stranger. It could be a family member. And after that, you know, try to see if you can find a Bible teaching, preaching sanctuary that nurtures you in the word of Christ. If you can't find that, that's why we're here on Purpose Kingdom Network, where we broadcast almost every night, where we can just have a church without walls until you can find that church that you can feel free in your heart to accept and believe and be nurtured in the word of Christ. And with that being said, I'm just going to go ahead into the announcements. If you want to correspond with us here at Purpose Kingdom Network, you can correspond with us here at purposekingdomnet@gmail.com, where you can send your comments, questions, concerns. You can send a prayer request, or you can just simply say hello. We gladly have that. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at purpose_kingdom. We invite you to like us on Facebook, where you can hear any of our past or previous broadcasts. And you can also see our upcoming advertisements. You can, you know, where you get the replay of our show in case you missed it. You can also go to www.blogtalkradio.com/purposekingdom, where you can simply type in a host name or a show name, and you can hear that show in its entirety and at your convenience. And we also thank you for that. We're also on iTunes, LinkedIn, and anywhere where podcasts are broadcasted, you can listen to Purpose Kingdom Network there. Just don't forget to like us, and that way you won't miss an episode. We also invite you to go to Anchor.com or Anchor FM, where you can get a morning word of inspiration. And please feel free to let a friend know of that morning word of inspiration. So don't forget, go to Anchor.com or Anchor FM. And on the Purpose Kingdom, you can go get a morning word of inspiration. And like I said, don't forget, invite a friend. Or just tell someone. And I would greatly appreciate that. And with that being said, with God's Will Life Blessing, we're going to be broadcasting tomorrow evening at the 8 p.m. hour for The Turning Point. And it's going to be hosted by Elder Charles Lee and Marlene Lee. And once again, at the 8 p.m. hour, we will be broadcasting The Turning Point with Elder Charles Lee and Reverend Marlene Lee. Please, once again, feel free to invite someone. This is our couples ministry, and we are gladly anticipating you listening in to tomorrow's broadcast. We thank you so much. And with that being said, that's the end of the announcements, and we're just going to go ahead and proceed with wrapping up tonight's show. And like I said, I thank each and every one of you for joining in for tonight's episode, whether you're joining online or, you know, on your phone. We thank you so much for participating in tonight's show. Also, you know, I know this month is, you know, what they call Black History Month, but I like to call it Black R Story Month. And I'm just happy that, you know, there's so much a deeper knowledge and a deeper understanding as this month goes on. There is so much participation into, you know, celebrating the history of, you know, what goes on with, you know, our actual history, where we actually have a say and, you know, what we hear as far as what is celebrated as, our history. You know, there was a time that, you know, there was, when I was educated, it was more so of a Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King than a Malcolm X. It was more of a W.E.B. Boys than a Marcus Garvey. But now it's more diversified. You know, we didn't hear about, you know, we heard more about Benjamin Banneker than Nat Turner. It was more so where it felt as though we were, there was a learning sanitizing where it was just that we know that, you know, slavery was a dark history, but we don't want all of the dark parts to, you know, be revealed. But this country has had a history of having, you know, darker parts, you know, even past slavery. You know, this was supposed to be the melting pot of the world until it was, you know, it's been slowly revealed. And not just black people, it was just been, it's been other peoples. You know, there was a time where we reached out to Japanese dissidents where we thought as though that we can, you know, build something here. But when World War II kicked off, what did we do? We stripped them of their land and we threw them in jail. You know, there was also, you know, before the Cuban Missile Crisis, where we invited them to come to Miami, where we said, this is a safe haven. But once the Cuban Missile Crisis started, what did we do? We started throwing them in jail and started naming them criminals. This country has had a track record of inviting or so-called being a pleasant melting pot. But when, as time goes on and as, you know, the media started expanding, once people started seeing so-called things as the Rodney King beating and, you know, and so on and so forth. And right now, as, you know, as far as 2 to 3 years ago where we had just seen police officers just shooting innocent black Americans for no reason. You know, I hear the phrase constantly, let's make America great again. But the thing I want to say is, when was this country great? Was it great in 1936 when Jesse Owens single-handedly won the heart of a nation of Germany that was so-called supposed to be the heart of the Aryan nation? Or was it in Mexico City in 1968? Was it then where America was given a black eye by the raised black fist, when America was winning medals left and right, where they were just dominant until the whole speculation was, are these people really happy? At that time, people were looking to defect over in this country, where they thought this was the land of milk and honey. But when they seen two athletes holding up a raised black fist and turning it back to the American national anthem, that was a time where America was not great. But maybe to someone it was great. Is that the time that they're talking about or referring to when they say let's make America great? Or how about after 1968 when we started entering the Vietnam War, when we started drafting random people, just pulling fresh out of high school, giving them a number and saying, hey, you've been drafted. Where they've thrown them over foreign lands and foreign places where they had to fight for their lives, literally. Where they only had 6 weeks of combat training, thrown on a cargo plane, given an M16, and says, do your best for your country, son. For the many people coming back in body bags, in coffins, missing legs, missing hands, and missing arms, come back and shunned by the same nation that they were supposed to be defending. I guess America was great then, was it? I don't know. Maybe I should go back to another point in time. I'm trying to figure out when was America great. But, you know, as I wrap up the show, you know, and, you know, I hope you've enjoyed reading 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 1 through 58. And every battle, you know, that we fight, you know, whether it's physical or spiritual, we have to prepare for, you know, for any fight. And, you know, in this very great nation, you know, we can't understand, you know, any more than this is a point that we can't give up and we can't give in. It's both a physical and spiritual warfare that goes on. One attack goes into the other. And, you know, once we buy in that, hey, things weren't that bad, you know, we really have to understand. Especially that now as time starts to slip away and some of these, you know, great atrocities that happen, you know, within, you know, our lifetime. And it seems as though it has never happened. It seems that there were never a Holocaust. And the more and more it seems that we get away from it, it seems the more and more that it seems to be a thing of fiction. You know, I know some people will say that, you know, when man first went on the moon, that it was a movie, it never happened. Well, at this point, as time goes on, it doesn't even matter. Because whether it's on the moon or if it's in space, it doesn't affect us here on Earth. You know, this spiritual warfare that we're going through is a trick of the enemy where it gets us to look one way while attacking another thing. You know, what they say is, you know, what doesn't kill me will make me stronger, but what you don't work on will be your weak link and weak point, and that's something that could be attacked. You know, we have to make sure that we spiritually reinforce ourselves. And I hope, you know, tonight's show is some kind of understanding and some kind of help, even though through the means of sports, you know, there is no means of how you can be ministered to. And one of the things I like to do is I like to bridge the gap between sports and spirituality. And, you know, that's what I'll do on Self-Expressive Sports Editions. I just like to do a retraction and apology because tonight was actually not my night to come on. But next week, I believe Iron Sharpens Iron will be on next Friday. We'll go ahead and see if we can get that correction made for next Friday. So for those of expecting Iron Sharpens Iron, I apologize. But this has been Self-Expression Sports. I'm your host, Brother Robin Pop-Pop Hudson. Once again, thank you for joining us for the 1,108th episode. Thank each and every one of you. Valentine's Day is coming up, and I know that, but one thing I just want to do as soon as a message is, you know, what I like to do each and every time before I sign off. Even though Valentine's is an expression of love, one of the best things that you can do is make sure that you love yourself. If you can't love yourself, you can't love someone else. It's just impossible. So make sure that you absolutely love yourself. And if you can't love yourself, there's no way you can actually have an honestly outward expression of love. So make sure you you do that and take care of yourself and take care of one another. And my brother's keeper, yes, I am. And my sister's keeper, yes, I am. So my brother, my sister, I am signing off, and I am out of here. Peace.
Jesus bled. He raised me, I will not lose. He saved me, I will not lose. Set me free, I will not lose. Never want to see me down, I will not lose.